So now we are going to discuss about the Priestman's plan, which is an important plan in the group incentive plans. Under this particular plan, the starting point is productivity of the group. So this is a focal area. Standard output is laid for the group and minimum wage is assured. So these are the three things. So there is a certain objective of producing an X number of parts. And once those parts are produced, you get a certain incentive. Now, this particular plan, it encourages the feelings of team spirit amongst the members. So they're all given an objective and they're all, you know, they are kind of motivated to achieve that target. Now, this scheme does not consider the individual efficiency. Since it's a part of the group plans, it does not lay stress on the individual efficiency. So students, this is something which you have to remember. Thus, the inefficient member of the group also gets a bonus. So many inefficient people are pulled up by the virtue of a team effort done by the other members of the group. The next plan that we look at is the Scanlon plan. Under this plan, the workers are involved in the decision making. So it's an interesting plan where the behavioral scientist Scanlon has involved the workers in certain areas of decision making. So they are involved in the various screening committees in the plant to find out ways, why there is a wastage, or there are ways in which they can judge the cost reduction and provide suggestions. So in this way, employees work with their supervisors, their managers, and other fellow employees on various screening committees. So these people, they are further motivated through an incentive of being a part of any decision making done at various levels in the organization. The next particular plan when it comes to a group setting is the profit sharing plan. Under the scheme of profit sharing, a certain percentage of profit is distributed at a fixed ratio among some categories of employees annually. So probably the employees have done an extraordinary job. They have been able to motivate others. They have been able to prevent strikes, or they have been consistently performing above a certain set target. So these particular employees, they get on an annual basis a sort of a bonus or incentive. The decision of sharing of profit to the employees is informed in advance in this case, so that there is no, grudge between other employees, and they are also communicated the reasons subsequently. As a part of this, there are two aspects. One is a current profit sharing. Under this, it is directly paid to the employee annually or on a 6-monthly basis. The other type is a deferred profit sharing, in which they are not paid directly to the employee but credited in their provident fund account or to the pension account. So money is given, but not directly for that quarter or that 6 months or annually, but on a later basis as seen here. Now, what are the merits associated with this type of a group incentive plan? The workers have a substantial or a sort of a share in the profit and not losses incurred by the employer. This is very important. So they are not a part of the losses, but they assume a share in the profits. This next merit is it represents a reward for the group effort and group efficiency, which is responsible for a kindling of the team spirit, which is mentioned here. Thus, they develop a sense of camaraderie or belonging or attachment to the organization. And profit sharing results into equitable distribution of the profit. So nobody goes home without a share of their profit. Thus, the morale of the entire team is high. Now, there are certain demerits which we shall also view. Employees are entitled to bonus when the company themselves or the company itself earns a profit. They do not get any bonus when the company incurs losses. For example, let's say a washing machine manufacturing company has done really well before the pandemic, especially during the times of New Year, Diwali, and festivities. But after the pandemic, the sales suddenly dropped. Now what happens? Since they have not made any profit, can they impart any bonuses? No. So it's not possible for newly established companies to pay bonuses. Now we know that newly established companies, they borrow heavily from the market, they have seed investments, and they generally, for the first, quite a few years, they are in loss until they break even. So in this context, they are not in a position to pay bonuses. The third demerit is that there is no distinction between efficient and inefficient employees of the company while there is a distribution of the said bonus. For example, let's say Ram is a very efficient worker. Ram is able to produce 500 parts in a day, whereas Shyam is known for his inefficiency and only produces a 400 meager parts. There's a difference of 100 parts produced, but during the distribution, both Ram and Shyam tend to get the same amount of bonus in their paychecks. Now we are looking at, what is productivity gain sharing? We have looked at the concept of individual and group incentives, and we now progress to productivity gain sharing. First, let's understand the concept here. So in the recent years, productivity gain sharing as a variation of pay for performance has been instituted as a managerial or a management strategy for promoting productivity through an incentive system. Here, the employees share in cash bonuses and they are derived from the contributions they make towards cost savings and improved agency. So for example, if they prevent the strike from happening and the work progresses in spite of a strike scare, they will get a share of the contributions. If there is less wastage in the production of the eventual products, they are again contributing to the cost saving and are a candidate to productivity gain sharing. So over here we can see two distinct concepts. One is the conventional profit sharing pie and the gain sharing pie on the right hand side. Over here, if you look at, this will be the employee share out of the profit generated. Now this is based on year-end profit. So it's annualized, paid annually or on retirement, and no employee involvement is seen here. It is as per the discretion or the volition of the management. Now here is the gain sharing pie, where the employee share is a distinct part based on operational performance, paid more frequently. So it may be paid in a quarter, it may be paid on a monthly basis or a biannual basis. And employee involvement is critical. So if the employee is able to produce more parts, if the employee is able to complete more sales, is showing diligence, is showing leadership attributes, may be a candidate for the gain sharing. Now the next aspect is, let's come to understand the typical elements of a gain sharing plan. Gains and resulting payouts are self-funded based on savings that are generated by improved performance. Now what do we mean by this? What we mean is that if there are additional units sold and profits generated thereby, or a substantial amount of wastage that is reduced and savings generated thereby, they become self-funded. So the funds which are usually wasted or gone in a wastage can be diverted to the employees. Gain sharing commonly applies to a single site or standalone organization, because there it is easy to be monitored and then subsequently paid out. Many plans often have a year-end reserve fund to account for deficit periods. So there is a surplus fund, and from this fund, a certain amount of bonuses or incentives can be paid out. When successfully applied, productivity gain sharing has these, you know, benefits. So helps companies achieve sustained improvement in key performance measures. Rewards performance improvement, we've already explained this. Again, self-funds payouts from savings generated, already explained in detail. Aligns employees to organizational goals. So there are more employees who kind of perform better in order to, you know, be successful or qualify successfully for such a plan. And of course, fosters a culture of continuous improvements. So the employees will scan methods of reducing waste further. They will look at techniques of how can we do the same things in a more proficient manner and so on. Now, a productivity gain sharing scheme needs to effectively engage employees to improve the organization's productivity, right? Otherwise, how would the employees qualify for such a scheme? The management should reward them appropriately for the improvements made. So if there is some commitment that there would be a productivity gain sharing scheme which will be run, the management should show a certain sense of commitment in its progression. The last point is, as a success factor, the success of productivity gain sharing often should depend on the organization's culture and system of doing things, where people are looked as key resources and not just as a basic resource. They're looked upon as a capital, and with their unison, production is improved, performance is improved. So these are some important success factors when we are considering the productivity gain sharing. So we are going to, with the help of the Scanlon plan, look at productivity gain sharing. So as we know, according to this particular plan, any increase in the sales turnover of an organization is basically due to a sort of a partnership between the labor and the management, right? It's a joint effort. For example, if a particular washing machine manufacturing company, yeah, it tends to create those washing machines and then sell them across the various parts of India. So what's happening essentially is the labor they create, they assemble the parts, and they create a fully functional washing machine. Now, what does the management do? The management generates the need of the product in the country through the sales initiatives, through the promotions and advertisements that happen, and then there is a profit. So if each piece is being produced at, let us say, 3,000 rupees and is being sold at a hefty profit of about, say, 15,000 or 20,000 rupees, it's a local unit. So if you notice that there's a good amount of profit there, yeah? So the calculation formula is provided here, which shows the standard Scanlon plan formula. It calculates the bonus fund available for the distribution. Now here, if you see, the first thing is the labor cost to the sales ratio. So what is the cost that has gone in? Now, hypothetically, I've just mentioned that, okay, it costs maybe 3,000 base. And then, you know, the sales ratio is something different. Then we multiply it by the sales that have actually happened. So what are those particular sales that have happened in those 6 months or a year's time? So this particular difference, okay, cost to sales ratio is multiplied by the total sales. And what is subtracted is the wages and the salaries that have been already paid, correct? Because that's a cost to the company. The company also has to account the basic, the wages and salaries that are already paid. Those cannot be included in the profits. That's a basic liability. Now here, after this calculation has been completed, the remaining amount is multiplied by a reserve ratio already set forward, and this forms the basis of the productivity gain sharing according to the Scanlon formula. Another essential plan or formula is used to calculate productivity gain sharing, and this is known as the Rucker plan. So the Rucker plan is based on the premise that the ratio of the labor costs to the production value is historically stable in the manufacturing industry. Now, this is a presumption made by Rucker in order to create this specific gain sharing plan. The objective of this plan is to create, to increase the value added in the products. When there is an increase in the value added, a fixed percentage of that increase is paid out as a bonus. So to simplify this, we have a sort of an image in the next slide through which we will understand the nuances of this particular plan. So students, as mentioned in the previous slide, we are going to simplify this particular process by looking at this figure here. Now this figure shows the creation and the distribution of the value added. So if you add value through the production processes or the capital that you have invested in a specific product or service, then you can reap the benefits of the same. So this is probably the sales that have happened. Now this can be divided into these particular aspects of value added and the purchases. And this is the creation of value added. Now here there is a distribution of the value added thereby. So it is gone to the profit. It is also eaten up by these aspects like a tax which is levied, interest that is paid, depreciation on the machines and the labor cost. Now out of the profit that is generated, we have the dividends to be paid, the retained earnings and the gain sharing bonus, as you can see. Now where the dividends and the retained earnings go into the organization's share to further develop the organization, this gain sharing bonus is going into the pockets of the employees and hence is known as the employees' share. Now this is the Rucker's plan calculation formula. The below figure shows us how this is done. So the total value added in a current year, for example, let's say in 2022, there has been a substantial amount of sales for a specific product. Now, this will be considered as a total value added. So, removing all those factors seen in the previous diagram, we will be also minusing the labor cost and the competitiveness, divide it with the labor cost, the competitive ratio. Then we will be subtracting the actual wages similar to the Scanlon plan, and we will multiply it by the reserve ratio. Hence we will come to the gain sharing which will be provided to the employees or the workers. Now profit sharing is the next topic that we are going to discuss as a part of the incentive schemes and plans. Let's look at the introduction and a brief history of this concept. Profit sharing is an incentive-based compensation program to award employees a percentage of the company's profits, pretty similar to the last concept. The amount distributed to each employee may be weighted by the employee's base salary so that the employees with higher base salaries receive a slightly higher amount of shared pool of the profits. So for example, if a general manager is going to get a certain profit sharing, this will have to be substantially higher than what is paid to a blue collared production worker. Yes, so there would be a sort of a difference here. So generally this is done on an annual basis. So again, it's a way of showing appreciation for the work that has been done by the workers, by the capitalists or the people who are the management part of the organization. So we are now going to look at the advantages and the disadvantages of profit sharing. Let's first cover the set of advantages. Now, as you might recollect, profit is a word which might interest everybody. Yes, so if a company has a profit and I would be a part of that, I would simply be motivated to be in that aspect. So brings groups of employees to work together towards a common goal, the success or the benefit of the company. Now, if there is a subsequent profit, I as an employee would also gain from that aspect. It also helps employees focus on profitability. So let's say I want to purchase a new two-wheeler for my family. I am working as a blue-collared laborer in one of the organizations, for example, and I aspire to buy a two-wheeler so that I can have my own mode of transport. Now, when the company, when I work, for the company, and when I say, all right, I'm going to help realize this dream by being a part of the profitability, and that very year I receive a bonus of about 8 or 10,000, and it becomes enough for me to make a down payment for a 50 or 60,000 rupees two-wheeler, and then subsequently I am in a position to pay an EMI. Yeah, so it helps people focus on product profitability. The cost of implementing the plan rise and fall within the company revenues. So if the company makes a profit, it's good, but if it doesn't, then the company's revenues itself are affected, nothing else, and enhances commitment to the organizational goals. So it keeps a tight alignment of the employees vis-a-vis the organization's goals. Now, there are certain disadvantages over here as well. The pay for each employee moves up or down together. So no individual differences for merit of performance. So let's say if, Shekhar and Chandrasekhar are two employees working for a production plant in Gujarat, in one of the, industrial areas in Gujarat. Now, Shekhar is one who is really not making much difference and is not working as diligently as Chandrasekhar. But unfortunately, both these people, unfortunate for Chandrasekhar that despite being very diligent, he is not identified for an individual plan under this profit sharing. Focuses only on the goals of profitability, which may be at the expense of quality. So there might be waste in terms of rework, or there may be waste in terms of rejection by end clients, but this is not considered here. For smaller companies, these plans may result in drastic savings in earnings for employees. Swings in earnings for employees. So if there is a person who is, earning say 10,000 rupees one month, the next month he may earn 15,000, but again come back to 10,000 if there is no profit sharing. So if you notice, there is a drastic swing of 5,000 rupees in some months of their earnings. Now we move on to the next part, which is financial and non-financial incentives. So students, when we examine methods of motivation that can actually be applied at the workplace, we normally create two categories, one being the financial type and the other one is a non-financial type or method. Now this is self-explanatory. I believe everybody has an understanding that financial methods directly involve some sort of a monetary reward. Yeah. So motivation is presented in some sort of a monetary reward. So it may be some sort of an allowance payment, a bonus, a profit sharing, something which will be given to you in the form of a credit or a cash incentive. On the other hand, we've got a non-financial type or a method which actually brings monetary rewards in an indirect manner, and they are targeted at providing psychological benefits for the workers. Things like the career advancement, a sort of a job entitlement, yeah, job security, and several other aspects. So these are, elements where there are non-financial incentives. Like let's say employee empowerment. Considering the decisions or views of employees in a certain manner is a non-financial incentive provided to the employee, and it can raise their morale, give them more sense of involvement in the organization. Now let's look at each one in further detail. If you had observed, we had on the right hand side the image, and we are going to expand on that. So the first important type of financial incentive is known as the pay and allowances category. Here, any monetary benefit offered by the employer to its employees for meeting expenditures over and above the basic salary are known as salary allowances. So for example, the company takes into consideration that because of the recent inflation or rise in the prices, the basic salary is not sufficing. So they may give some sort of an inflation allowance or a mehengai bhatta, okay, which may be put or computed separately. So this may be something, or they might give some other sort of allowance which may be over and above the basic salary. The employers, they offer various kinds of additional benefits in monetary terms to their employees over and above which are mentioned here. Pay and allowances. So salaried workers are not normally paid overtime, but they may receive other financial benefits. The fact of the matter is that those who work 60 hours a week are often too tired to do a good work, but still they may be paid extra benefits. The next part is that of the incentive pay. The idea is the prospect of financial compensation will motivate the employee to hit certain performance figures or financial targets, hence the need for a payment in terms of incentives. For incentive plan targets, the employees must have confidence that they can achieve the targets. Again, as a part of the incentive pay, there are a wide variety of incentives that are available to employees. Now, each of them is designed to be suitable for different employees doing different jobs. So these schemes include sales bonus. So this is normally paid if a sales target has been reached. For salespeople, this makes up for a significant part of their salary. So a lot of salespeople, their base salary is not very significant, and a majority of their take home includes the sales bonus that is paid. The next part is the performance bonus. This is paid to an individual or a group or factory-wide basis and is often paid for reaching targets of output and or quality. So for example, if there were not a single rejection in a big lot of parts, then this particular group may be a candidate for a performance bonus. This method of payment is an important part of the human resources management, and it tends to basically motivate the people who perform. The other schemes in this particular broad payment category include the Diwali bonus, often called as a 13-month salary. So as we know, we are paid 12 months of salary, and this is another month added. And this is paid for loyalty to the business. In some countries such as Germany, virtually all companies will pay a Christmas bonus. So now in India, we have a Diwali bonus. In the Western countries, Christian countries, they have a Christmas bonus as well. The next type of incentive pay will be the profit share, which we have seen some time back. So some businesses will pay a percentage of profit to the employees. The amount that they receive will normally depend on salary and the length of service. So rewarding those that had been with the company longest tend to earn more of such profit share. The next part is that of gain sharing, which we have seen. Again, we'll quickly repeat this. So it's a reward system in which team members earn bonus for increasing productivity or reducing wastages. Just an example, if the wastage is reduced from 5% to less, the benefits may be shared equally. So this we've covered already. Yeah. Gain sharing also includes the aspect of productivity gain sharing, which is the distribution of the wealth generated as a result of the productivity improvement between the organization and its employees. So to this, we had looked at the Rucker's plan, the Scanlon plan. Yeah, the distribution is based on a predetermined formula. So we had the Scanlon and the Rucker's plan agreed upon both by the management and the employees or a representative union that tends to, you know, work on part of the employees. Now, in profit sharing, we look at sharing of profits with the employees by way of distribution of the bonuses. Profit sharing plan has its own shortcoming. One, that it has become a regular feature in the government departments, irrespective of performance. And two, it may have no relation with the individual efforts as such. The company contributes a portion of its pre-tax profits to a pool that will be distributed amongst eligible employees. Generally, this tends to be done on an annual basis. Another interesting sort of a financial incentive is a stock option. Now, a stock option gives an investor the right but not the obligation to buy or sell a stock at an agreed upon price and date. Yeah, so many of you might have looked at the popular stock options. We also have options related to the indices. Yeah, like you have a Nifty related or a Nifty bank related options as well. So there are two types of options: puts, which is a bet that a stock will fall, or call, which is a bet that a stock will rise. For example, let's say the price of Infosys may be today, for example, 1200. Now, if you're given an option which is supposed to expire maybe in the next 3 months, and you are told that, okay, if Nifty rises to a certain extent, like if it goes to 1500, and if you exercise that, you will get a certain profit. That's a call option. Another option can be a put option, where if they say Nifty falls to 1000, currently it is 1200, and on that fall you will gain per option a certain amount, that is a put option. Employees who are granted stock options hope to profit by exercising their options at a higher price than what they were granted. So if you were given, let's say, a Wipro stock option, and you've bought a call option, you've got a call option from your company, you've got, say, some 150 or 200 call options as per the company set, and if the company's price rises, the base share price, you will earn a profit. Then we have retirement benefits. I think this is the simplest to explain, which includes accumulation of the provident fund. After 5 years in service, generally tend to earn a gratuity, a leave encashment, and pension. So the provision of terminal benefits provides assurance to employees during the service for their future. So once the employees retire, they will have these funds where they can ensure a standard lifestyle in the coming years and months post-retirement. So one of the most important retirement benefit plan is the Employees Provident Fund, or EPF. Employees Provident Fund came into existence in with the promulgation of the Employees Provident Fund Ordinance on 15th November 1951. So it was brought in by the government to help with the terminal benefits. After a person ends their job, that they would get some benefits still coming in. It was replaced with the Employees Provident Fund Act in 1952. So this is a brief background about the famous Employees Provident Fund. The Employees Provident Fund Bill was introduced in the Parliament as the bill to provide for the institution of provident funds for employees in factories and other establishments. The Act is now referred to as Employees Provident Funds and Miscellaneous Provisions Act. The board administers a contributory provident fund, pension fund, and insurance scheme for the workforce engaged in organized sector in India. Now, this particular board overlooks and operates three schemes. The EPF, which is the most famous, the Employees Provident Fund Scheme. The Employees Pension Scheme, which looks into pension of government employees of military services. And the Employees Deposit Linked Insurance Scheme, also known as EDLI. Now, the EPF will be the first one which we will look at. The Employees Provident Funds and Miscellaneous Act applies to any business or establishment within these industries. Okay, there's an industry list which can be referred to, or any activity notified by the central government in the official gazette. Another condition is if an organization employs 20 or more employees, including contractual workers, it is liable for the EPF. This is also applicable to cinema theaters with over five employees. The other element is, which relates to retirement benefits, is that of gratuity. Now, gratuity is a lump sum that a company pays when an employee leaves an organization and is one of the many retirement benefits offered by a company to an employee. In India, the basic requirements for gratuity are set out under the Payment of Gratuity Act 1971. An employee may also choose to pay gratuity outside of that which is a requirement by this act. The Payment of Gratuity Act 1971 applies to employees engaged in factories, in mines, in oil fields, in plantations, in ports, in railway companies, okay, shops or other establishments with 10 or more employees. Gratuity is fully paid by the employer and no part comes from the employee's salary. The next part is that of leave encashment. So all salaried individuals have different types of leaves that are entitled to casual leaves, sick leaves, earned leaves, etc. Not all of the leaves may be used, some may remain unused. So leave encashment is also a useful benefit that is provided to the employees. The next one is that of a pension, which comes up as a useful retirement benefit. A pension is a fund into which a sum of the money is added during an employee's employment years and from which payments are drawn to support the person's retirement from work in the form of periodic payments. Now, pensions are very popular with our grandparents. We have seen with some of our parents as well, who have worked rigorously and religiously for many organizations, for the organizations, and they've retired from that organization. And then they are drawing pensions in the form of a monthly payment. A pension may be a defined sort of a benefit plan where a fixed sum is paid regularly to a person, or a defined contribution plan under which a fixed sum is invested and then becomes available at the retirement age. So this is basically a retirement benefit which is quite popular, especially in India. The term retirement plan and superannuation tends to refer to a pension granted upon retirement of the individual. Retirement plans may be set up by employers, insurance companies, the government, or other institutions such as employer associations or the trade unions. So these are some of the entities that can set up a retirement or a superannuation plan for that individual. Thank you.